Thirsty, episode 1. Yo. So, if that wasn't obvious enough, this is Thirsty Vibes, episode 1. Broadcasting here from Pasadena, California. And it's really hot in this conference room, but we're doing it anyway. With me today, we have graphic designer extraordinaire, Luis Hernandez. What's up, my man?
Hey, guys. What's up? What's going on?
Nothing much, Luis.
Yeah, I'm excited because it's my first episode, because I missed out on the first episode, which is all founders. But I'm excited for this one.
As are we. And yeah, it was all founders last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to tell our story. And they're probably the best people to do that. But now we get a chance to kind of keep introducing the faces and the players at Thirsty, and that's really exciting. Speaking of new faces and voices on the show today, next we have Christina Young. What's
Hello.
Up?
Hello. Hi. Yep, I'm new to this podcast, first episode. Long-time listener.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
First-time caller.
And where are you from? What do you do? First-time caller?
I am the director of ops here at Thirsty, and what I do is a lot of like process stuff, just keeping things streamlined, keeping things moving, and coordinating on the day-to-day, talking to clients, making sure things are just moving along.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. And a recent blog post we had describe Nina as the unanimous vote getter for Thirsty MVP. So I think that MVP. Pretty much accurately sums MVP. Up. Yeah, MVP. MVP. MVP.
Yay.
Yeah. And the holdover from last week's episode, the one and only, you know his voice, you know what he's all about, Carlos Oliva.
Hey, everybody. I've actually been sitting in the same chair since the last episode, so I've been waiting for a while. How's it going?
That's the dedication we expect from each and every participant of Thirsty Vibes. And that's the quality we deliver to you on a every other weekly basis. And that's what we're going to get into today. So, Thirsty Vibes, episode 1. First one was episode 0, so this is episode 1, because we're cool and that's how podcasts do it. And so last week, we kind of talked about the journey behind Thirsty and what it stands for and who we are. So we kind of dove into this idea of we create fans as this rallying cry of Thirsty. You know, no matter what you do or who you are, we believe that you can have fans. And that's our mission, and that's what we are all about here. So today, we want to just kind of dive deeper into what that means exactly, because we kind of touched on it on a surface level, but what does that actually mean? And that's kind of a conversation about just what fans look like today in general. And I think it's pretty funny that leading into this, Carlos and I are rocking Laker scarves right now because we are waiting on bated breath for Kawhi Leonard to be announced to the Lakers. And it's kind of this thing that just been at the front of my mind all day, nonstop. I mean, I'm dying. Josh Young as well. We're dying here with anticipation for something like that. And it's funny because that feeling is something that's a little more inherent when we're talking about sports and stuff like that. But it's that kind of like anxious pit of your stomach, like excitement for something that you care about. That is the feeling we're kind of trying to capture with our work. So, Kawhi, if you're listening, we love you. Come home. And yeah, we're excited. So I want to ask, what is your earliest fan memory? Like, what's that thing that back in the day, just that first memory of like something that you were just hooked on, obsessed with, that thing that when you're with a group of people, you have to tell them about it.
You want to start? All right, cool. I mean, I can start.
Go ahead.
I mean, I remember when I was like little, I used to love Batman, and Batman, like, what was, like, one of the biggest things that growing up, just seeing the animated series and seeing the Tim Burton movies. But then I kind of took it to an extreme where I kind of look at teams that look like they had, like, a vampire. So, like, one of the first teams that I follow for soccer was Valencia. Because they have the bat as their logo. So I was like, oh, damn. They have, it's like Batman. Hell yeah. So back then they had David Villa, David Abella, Cañizares. So I remember that team. And then from there, that's why I like the Ravens for NFL, because they remind me of bats for some reason. So that's why, like, that's my association with being, like, a Batman aficionado. It's just, like, something that was, like, very dark or intimate. And then having that backstory of him being an only child and his parents being murdered. So I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. It's kind of real. And it's not, like, superficial or, like Marvel Universe kind of style. Like, it's very sci-fi, but it's, like, it's something that hits home. So, like, since I was little, I always tried to associate anything that was, like, Batman-related to, like, sports. So, like, having the underdog. But, like, for me, at first, it was more visual, mm-hmm. just having that bat signal. Yeah.
That is cool. It kind of fits because you're such a visual person, being a graphic designer, like how that visual identity is so clear. It's so clearly like you see the logo or the symbol and you know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And how that like translates for you. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think most other kids, their fanhood of Batman starts because they appreciate the dark thematic elements of his backstory, or is it just because he beats up bad guys with cool gadgets?
No, I think it was the dark aspect. I mean, he was more like a regular person. He was more human. He had money, that's for sure. So like everybody was attracted, like, oh man, imagine I have all this like billions of dollars. What can I do with it? But like, it was this guy that just had like all this money that inherited from his family, and he just tried to become a hero, but like in other people's eyes, he was like against the law. So it was like it didn't mesh with society correctly. But mm-hmm. that's how society sometimes works. Like you go for the underdog or the people that breaks the rules because they're so different from the normal, how society is normal. So that's like something that he was like a rebel too.
Question: what's your favorite Batman movie though? Which version of Batman?
Dark Knight.
Okay.
Christopher Nolan. Because of Christopher Nolan, like he's like a master at directing. So like his style is like Bob. But then after that would be probably Batman, like the Tim Burton one, okay. because of Jack Nicholson.
Yeah. Who's that? Michael Keaton, right?
Who was a better Joker though? Was it Jack Nicholson or Heath Ledger?
Oh man, I mean they're both like I feel like they're both different, especially for different eras. I will go with Jack Nicholson because I think he kind of inspired other Jokers to come up. Because I think if it weren't for a Jack Nicholson, I don't think Heath Ledger would have done that performance. Because I think it would have been a little bit much more harder to...
Yeah, I think
he kind of broke the mold.
I think I'm with you on that, too, because Jack Nicholson's kind of like the classic Joker, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You picture from like the old animated series or like the old...
Oh, yeah,
old
for sure.
Batman, Jack Nicholson really portrayed that pretty
even the Joker from the Batman Arkham Asylum games mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. that yeah. Joker yeah, yeah. represents the Jack Nicholson yep. Joker. It doesn't represent the Heath Ledger because mm-hmm. the Heath Ledger one was a little bit more of a he just didn't care, he was more of an anarchist, but the Joker Jack Nicholson was funny, evil, and it was all business to him, like mm-hmm. he wanted to take control of the city mm-hmm. So yeah, Jack Nicholson for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so my I guess earliest memory of fandom, I guess, would be Power Rangers.
Let's go.
I was like trying to think about it earlier, and I didn't have those same like fandom. I didn't have like posters on my wall or like New Kids on the wall. I wasn't into that stuff, I guess. Like, I was really like Power Rangers was the first kind of time that I remember like going to school to like talk about what happened on the episodes, you know,
yes.
and then like playing it during recess and like, oh, I'm the Pink Ranger, you're the Yellow, you're the Green Ranger. Like everyone had like their own kind of like take on it. And I remember having like the pajamas and then the like fighting gloves and like
Dude,
the toys.
I remember signing up for a contest to win the Green Ranger's dagger flute.
Yes.
That was
the dagger flute.
And I never won it.
No.
Was it the real dagger or was it just like a copy replica?
I'm pretty sure it was a replica. Nice. But I thought it was real.
Right?
Nice.
I dreamed.
Wait. Yeah. And then like going to when the movie came out, like begging my parents to take me to go see that movie and just like on the edge of my seat watching. Like I have very vivid memories of that. So I would say that was my earliest memory of fandom.
So which ranger are you?
Pink Ranger, obviously. Whoa.
Nice.
Obviously, because she's a badass.
I remember my neighbors, like, coming outside and saying, okay, we have to, like, establish this. Like, what ranger are you? And I was like, and I think they had asked me initially, like, thinking they would trick me. Like, what dinosaur do you like? And I said, pterodactyl. And it was like, oh, okay, you're the Pink Ranger. I was like, yeah, obviously.
You know your stuff.
I already knew.
Miss me with that.
So from then on, I was established in our group of friends. I was the Pink Ranger.
How about you, Carlos?
That's tough. My earliest memory of fandom is definitely like probably comics. Yeah, I think comics were definitely a big part of my fandom growing up as a kid. And I was definitely into like the Marvel Universe, Spider-Man, all kinds of stuff like that. Followed the whole story. I mean, and like Luis's whole relation to Batman, Spider-Man is kind of like a similar type of thing. Even though he got powers, he's still like a normal kid that kind of grew into it, you know, took the responsibility. Actually the whole comedy between the animated series, like the whole like joking, and he's kind of like a kid and he's like, he's sarcastic and he makes fun of his boss. He shoots his own photography. Like it's just the whole idea behind it. It was funny and awesome at the same time. So yeah, that's probably my earliest fandom memory.
Yeah. I mean, Spider-Man's incredible. And just the idea that the reason why Spider-Man is so relatable today, the reason why you can have Homecoming and Into the Spider-Verse and Endgame all release like within 2 years from each other and not suffer Spider-Man fatigue is because that character has achieved this level of relatability that is just so beyond like any other character. And it kind of leads into something like Spider-Man gets that pop because it's relatable. And for as different as the things we listed might sound, it's kind of the same mentality that we as the modern fan are looking for brands to kind of try to relate with us, right? It's just why you have this throwback culture coming back and why brands try to get to this relatable everyday place right now. The feeling that we have as we think back on those early fan memories still matter, and they kind of inform like what we do today. So what kind of brands, maybe historically or today, kind of get people to talk about them the same way we do when we talk about the things that like historically or kind of have like a nostalgic place for us?
I think definitely like just right off the bat, thinking of two brands in general, and they're huge brands and everybody knows them and they have that nostalgia and they have that feel where they can just throw back to like 90s, 80s, whatever it is, 70s, 60s, actually. You go to Adidas and Nike, right? Like those two brands can do that in like different parts of like culture as well. Like you have Nike, when you go into basketball culture, you go back to, you know, the Jordans, you go back to all that stuff. With Adidas, you can go as far back as the beginning of like soccer. You know, you have, you know, the Dazzler brothers who did Puma and Adidas, but like they split off and did their own brands. And now Adidas is this whole like cultural like thing where people are diehard Adidas fans, or, you know what I mean? They just stick within that brand. Like look at the soccer, like I guess you could look at terrace culture with soccer, and that's a whole different aspect. And it still comes back to the Adidas feel and the whole representation of that brand and how it's shown and the style and the fashion and the look. You know, those kinds of things pop out instantly. I don't know if you guys can touch on that or anything else.
Yeah, I mean, in a similar fashion, not the same industry, but Nintendo, I would say, is one that I think gives a lot to their fans As far as like throwing it back to like old school, you know, I was a fan of Zelda from the beginning, and the fact that they're like re-releasing games that they're the exact same game, but just upgraded graphics. That's like, that's focusing on like what they did right. Those games are, they hold up. They just upgrade the graphics and everyone's into them. So like, I appreciate that, and we'll, you know, play whatever game that comes out that I'm into.
With Nintendo also, like, you have the like little throwback systems that they're putting out now as well, where they have like, I don't know what, like 20 something games or whatever, or 50 games that they throw on there, and they're just old classic games that you remember playing, you know, in your living room, in your bedroom, wherever it was, like, and you can still play those games and be nostalgic and feel the same way you did when you were a kid playing those games. And
totally.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I like the fact that Nintendo, that you can play, like, my favorite game was Donkey Kong. When growing up in the 90s, playing Donkey Kong Country or Diddy Kong Quest, there were such difficult games.
Yeah.
But now that I have a Switch or like a Nintendo 3DS, like, playing Donkey Kong is still difficult. It's like, it's not an easy game. It has that nostalgic feel, but it still feels like true to what it was back in the day. Like, I feel that Nintendo has done a really great job. It's the same for like Adidas. Like, right now, I got kind of triggered because I was remembering Run DMC, like what Adidas did to hip hop.
Yeah.
And now what Adidas is doing to hip hop and rap right now, with Beyonce being
Gambino.
Gambino too. Especially Gambino having those sneakers that are like kind of messy looking.
Yeah, throwback.
But they're
weathered kind of sneakers.
Yeah, they're throwback. So it's like everybody's like hopping on that throwback train right now, but what I noticed also that a lot of brands that are trying to do the same thing, it just doesn't work.
To that point with the Gambino like stuff, right, those sneakers are like classic Adidas sneakers that like people wore in like the 70s and the 80s, you know what I mean, like those were iconic. And he's bringing them back like with his own flair to it, like, you know what I mean, like this is his style, this is his look. So it's kind of like jumping that on that nostalgia train and then adding your own spin to it, where it still feels new and it still feels relevant, but it still makes you feel something else.
Yeah. I think both those brands mentioned, they speak to two things. One, the staying power of strong brand presence. This idea that like when you build that strong brand, you have the ability to like continue through like and cycle through and continue to like pump out classics and still like have that ravenous fan base. But you get that by, one, obviously like putting out a good product. Obviously, like Adidas shoes and clothes wouldn't have fans if they weren't good, and Nintendo wouldn't have fans if their games weren't fun and creative and imaginative. But two, they also respect their fan bases. Nintendo respects their fan bases enough to put out challenging stuff that doesn't like pander to them, that doesn't like, you know, discount them. And Adidas respects their fan, and Nike respect their fan bases to put out stuff that caters to them. And that's kind of like, that's the separating point, because it can sound really easy to be like, all right, we create fans, everyone can have fans, so just do it, right? Like, just be popular and Nike. Make it happen. Yeah, Nike, just do it, Nike. And see, it's subliminal too. Like that's the power of good brands. Like, that's subliminal. Like, just do it is a Nike thing. But it's obviously not that easy. And there are really intentional steps that have to happen. We've talked about like fan and the good perception of that. But the other side of that is, when you look up the word fandom, it has kind of this negative connotation to it. Do we need to be careful with the kind of fans we're creating for brands today?
I mean, I think that's an interesting question. I think there's a line between fandom or being a fan and being a fanatic, right? Because like, you can be a fan of something and not like lose your mind over some, you know, like any little thing that happens with that brand or product or whatever it is. Being a fanatic about something, it's like this extra level of passion. Like, when I think about, you know, some sports fans, you know, and some, like, even like, I'm a fan of the Dodgers, don't get me wrong, but like,
no,
fans of the Dodgers, fans of like the Mexican national team, or the Raiders or things like that, where you see like these ultra crazed kind of fans who are in this environment where they become violent or they go crazy or they act, you know, a certain way.
It's funny that you use the word ultras because ultras is like
soccer.
It's like a soccer, like hooliganish like term. So like big fan groups refer to themselves as ultras, and those are like the most radical of fans. Yeah. They're like big groups, and a lot of them are kind of like tied to like, you know, violence and stuff like that. So it's kind of like, it's kind of funny to use ultra in like in that aspect because it kind of connects those two kind of things.
But I just wonder like what it is about us, like that fandom that pushes you over the edge to become a fanatic or makes you act a certain way. Like that's always something that's been interesting to me. But
it's like for me, like when I see a fan, like what pushes them to get a tattoo or like get a piece of artwork on their skin. And it's like you are like a hardcore fan. Like if you have a passion for a team, like I know that you, Carlos, have Liverpool. Yeah, right. And then John has Liverpool, and it's like, wow, it's like if I were to be a fan of like a team, I don't know where or what would I put. But it's like that's just an extent of like that's passion. That's like it goes in your blood. It's part of your DNA. It's part of who you are. So it's like I see that all these like super fans, it's just part of their life. It's part of their culture. That's what they live for. Like I see all these documentaries about like Chivas fans or America fans, and I'm like, why are they like so into the teams? It's like, but they live for it. That's all they do. It's like, it's also incredible.
It's also part of like the connection you make, right? With whatever group of fans that you're involved in, right? Like say you're a fan of like Liverpool. I'm like, I became a Liverpool fan, what, 2005 after the Champions League, right? But I didn't become like die hard or like as fanatical as I am until I started meeting other Liverpool fans and making that connection and, you know, having those conversations and learning more about the history and learning more about all these things where it's like, well, this is an amazing thing and this is something that I connect to and something that like calls to my passions and my things that I love that I can connect to easier. So that type of group is what kind of what calls those fans, right? Like the connection you get with the group of people that you're involved in.
Yeah. Would you say it's kind of like almost like an us versus them mentality where you have this like connection with
definitely. I mean, especially like with, I mean, we always go back to sports, right? But I mean, you think of fan, you think of sports, but you go back to sports and like it becomes like a local thing, like a rivalry. Like, you know, think of now here in LA, we have two soccer teams now, right? We have the LA Galaxy and we have LAFC, and that rivalry has become kind of like a, okay, if you're an LAFC fan, I don't like you. You're a Galaxy fan. And you're an LAFC fan, I don't like you. You know what I mean? So you have that rivalry, and that kind of, it's kind of like instant. I don't know how that happens. I don't know how that like instant like hate for, or like hate's kind of strong because I mean, I don't hate anybody, but.
No, but honest though, but, like actually though, like maybe not individual people, but like I can say that I hate the San Francisco Giants and I hate the Boston Celtics, and that when I meet someone, if that is the first thing I learn about them, there is a moment in
huge
time.
Judgment, like.
There's a moment frozen in time, if just a millisecond, where my immediate response to that is not good at all. And then that moment passes, and I'm like, oh, this is a good person. There's nothing. I'm not.
It's like another level of emotional investment. Mm-hmm. It's like I feel like it's an extra layer of just some kind of an emotional attachment where it's like, I think that's like the first layer of it is somehow you become emotionally tied, and then it gets so ingrained in you that it, like you said, Luis, it's like part of your DNA almost. It becomes your identity.
Yeah, there's days where the Galaxy player, Liverpool players, they lose. It's like, it ruins my day.
Absolutely.
My day's ruined. Like, they play like on a Saturday or a Friday and like it's a loss, it's like, damn, my whole weekend's ruined. Like,
or back-to-back World Series losses. Try
exactly
my Dodgers year.
Back-to-back, like two times the World Series and blow it. Like, come on. Well, like how can you not like be depressed after that?
I think, so the reason why I bring that up was because I have a question, like, does creating real passionate fans in any scenario also mean that you create enemies? because in sports, it's a little more just cut and dry. We're like, yeah, I'm a fan of the Lakers, so therefore my enemy are the Celtics. But it's that, what is it? Those fanships or that fandom has that strong emotional tie. But think about something like Nike, right? Like if Nike's most recent campaigns with Colin Kaepernick, with Serena, with all these kind of controversial figures, they take stands that, one, create emotional connections and ties with consumers, and that naturally creates enemies. Gillette, you know, you can go on and on with these different examples. So is that kind of like a component that exists?
I mean, I think only in those circumstances where they do take a stand, where there is this sort of like social justice almost that brands are aligning themselves with, which I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I just think it's a thing that, sure. You know, certain brands are taking those steps to inject themselves in cultural and social challenges, but most brands will stay safe. I mean, most brands are not going to take a stand. Most brands are going to play to both sides because they want everyone to be a fan. But again, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think there's something to be said about taking a stand and aligning yourself with, kind of like you said, Alex, like the right kind of people, the people that you want to be fans. Mm-hmm. Because I think Nike didn't lose any sleep over losing a bunch of fans who weren't, you know, for Colin Kaepernick. Like, I don't think it's made any difference for them sales-wise or anything like that. So maybe it's their stand of, like, making sure they're aligning with the right people.
Mm-hmm. And I think those brands, the ones that do take that step and do take that, like, leap into something, like, taking a stand for something, right? Like, those brands are the ones that stand out the most, right? Mm-hmm. Like, those are the ones that people talk about the most. Those are the ones that get ingrained in people's memory and in their mind. Like, you remember these moments that this brand or whatever it was took a stance on this one thing, and like, you remember that as a part of whatever's going on in the world or whatever's going on in your life or whatever it is. Like, those brands bring you back to that moment, or those stories, you know, bring you back to that moment. Mm-hmm. And those brands stand out the most.
Yeah. You know, the more I think about it, I even, again, going back to Apple, like, I go back to, like, that when they really blew up, there wasn't an exactly a stand that they took at that time, but, and even to this day, but that the Apple fanatic versus the PC fanatic, right? That enemy that grows when the emotional attachment is there.
Maybe it's not even just taking a stand, maybe it's changing something, right? Mm. Like, Apple changed the game with a lot of consumers, right? Like, being like, user friendly, and that type of experience you get with an Apple product, like, being so easy to use, you know, the phone, being able, like, touchscreen was something nobody ever used before, right? And then bringing in a touchscreen and, like, knowing how to use it, right, when you open it up, like, that's huge. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a huge change for people, and being able to understand that right off the bat is something that obviously people are going to gravitate to, right? Like, if I know how to use this right off the bat, I'm going to use it all the time.
Yeah, it's like those wars that happen, like iPhone versus Samsung's, uh-huh. or like PlayStation versus Xbox, exactly. Like, which is, like, for me, is like the most classic like, uh-huh. battle, because it's like Halo versus, I don't know, like Killzone probably, or yeah, like, that was the, yeah. And then, like, I think
Halo wins all day.
Yeah, see, like, that's what I like about brands. They usually take a stand and they cater to their philosophy or like, mm-hmm. what they stand for. And usually there's usually a thing or a brand that usually goes against it, and then that gravitates, well, that catches a lot of eyeballs from other people, like, oh, okay, I'm not with this brand, so I'm gonna go with the other brand that's like the opposite.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons to choose different products, especially if they're in the same space, like I think of like Nikon versus Canon too. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a Nikon user, but not really any, like, honestly, I don't have any specific reason. I just, that was the first camera I used. My dad gave it to me. Oh, okay. He gave me an old school, I think it was the N2000 35 millimeter Nikon camera, and that's what I use, and that's what I got used to, and that's, I'm sure Canon makes quality products, but I'm just kind of aligned myself with Nikon because it has a little more of like a nostalgic feel for me. But I think there's reasons for people to identify with certain brands that come down to maybe just chance or affordability or, you know, some other kind of emotional attachment. But I think there's enough people out there to choose from, essentially. If you're a brand, you know, you can kind of cater to those. As long as you're catering to the people that actually do align with your values and align with your product, I think you're going to have a good time. You're going to you're gonna be able to sell a lot of...
Yeah. No, that's good because I look at all these ways we're talking about, these kind of really big picture, high scope ideas of like creating intense fans. You know, we have, you change an industry or the world, or you take a stand, or you make a strong first impression, or you do something to relate with a type of person or consumer. And those are very daunting things that, you know, most brands, to be honest, like aren't really ever going to be in a position to, you know, influence, at least from the kind of examples we're giving. So then kind of distilling that down, like what are the baby steps you would say like a brand would need to take to kind of start moving them towards having this conversation for the first time, maybe, or asking the question of like, okay, do we have fans? And if not, why not? And what do we have to do to change that?
I think it kind of starts with like telling a story, right? Like you create a product, you create something, and there's obviously a reason you did it or a thought process behind why you created this thing. And having like a backstory of how this happened or how this came to be will naturally, you know, get people's attention. Like there's people that will be interested in the story of how this happened or how this was created, and people start to attach themselves to that story and that kind of mentality that you created right from the beginning.
Yeah, I think with that too, is the people behind the brand. Is if you can make it human in some way, or have really strong personalities or people that are telling those stories or that are, you know, exuding these values, then I think you can create some sort of fandom who, based on just experience alone with a person who's, you know, behind the brand.
Yeah.
Yeah, like for me, like what brands that I follow that like actually like catch my attention are usually like brands that are like they stand for something or they're very like they have a very polarizing statement, which is like they go against society or they represent communities. So like for me, like it's very important for me to that brands represent people of color or like all sex and genders, because usually they stand out and they're serving a specific community that's not being served by other brands. So like when you're able to talk to those communities, for me that's like a big win because they haven't been catered for so long, and it's like now happening, it's barely happening in like in our history where brands are like finally like looking at those communities and they're like targeting them, but that's because they know how to talk to them, or they have a persona that knows how to talk to them, or they have an entity that represents what is good for those communities.
Yeah. It kind of all comes down to vulnerability with like those three things. But I think vulnerability can sound like one way, like a very like fragile or kind of like, I don't know, like scared in a way. But there's vulnerability of telling your story, which is just having the courage just to open up and talk about who you are, no matter how like, you know, open you get, like that's a doorway. Or to put people at the forefront and make it human. Christina, you kind of mentioned people and being human, but you also mentioned strong personalities, because like on the flip side of vulnerability, there's another type of vulnerability. We look at something like Wendy's, you know what I mean? Like it might not be vulnerability of like, I don't know, like heart to heart kind of conversation with someone, but it's a vulnerability of like putting yourself out there and just, you know, like being open with talking trash to McDonald's, you know, and then taking a stand, which, yeah, again, requires a level of vulnerability, but is also like an easy way for a brand to begin to carve out fans and just tell their story. Besides Wendy's, I kind of like wondered, are there any unique examples of brands catering to those three things in unique ways, like recently?
I mean, for me, it would be probably Rihanna Cosmetics, like Fenty Beauty, because she it's probably like one of the best products for people of color, because she was able to create a formula for all shades of color, and that's, no one has ever done that at a really affordable price, and it's a really good product. Rihanna is doing a really great job, especially her career. Like, it has attracted so many like people, because not just because of the music, but what she represents. Like, she's like a woman, and she's like the first, I think, I don't know if Forbes listed her as the number one female billionaire.
I think Kendall Jenner or Kylie Jenner?
I think it's Kylie.
It's Kylie Jenner, right?
I think Kylie being the youngest, though.
But Rihanna's.
Like, yeah, Rihanna. I don't know if it was like a person of color.
Got it.
I know she was like the top.
Got it.
But it was because, deal. Yeah, she has like a big, like she sells her stuff at Sephora, which is kind of a big deal. Not a lot of makeup artists. Like, I've never seen another person of color inside Sephora.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that comes with kind of what you said about kind of going against the norm or going with, I mean, I'm thinking even of like the Beyonce Adidas partnership of like, you know, the reason why she didn't go with another brand was because she looked when they pitched her, there wasn't a lot of diversity in the room. And so she walked out and her kind of reasoning for that was like, you know, I want to work with the people who look like me, who have my kind of like background, who are more representative of what I'm representative of. So I think that's a lot to be said of like people or brands that align themselves with or are taking a stand, going against the norm or finding ways to revolutionize the industries that they're in. And that can bring in a lot of fandom just in and of itself.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that touches on all the points we hit, right? Like, doing something that stands out and like changes the game, you know what I mean? And like connecting with people and telling a story behind it. So all of the elements that we literally talked about, like those brands do exactly that. You know, they connect with a certain group, they connect with people, they connect with the story, you know what I mean? All of that together makes for that brand to be, you know, where it's at, right? Like those elements of that make that brand be what it is.
I think, it's definitely a piece of the puzzle, because to touch on your point, Alex, about like Wendy's is like, I think that's like definitely something that they took as like a risk that they took, and it worked out for them. But I think it's just one piece of their kind of marketing strategy. You know, like they definitely have a presence and a voice online where, you know, they're maybe like their commercials or their other kind of avenues are very different. Burger King, for example, has very, very
so good.
Interesting kind of takes on, you know, how to market themselves. And they have a definitely like an interesting strategy. Whether that's helping their sales per se, the same with Wendy's, like, I don't know. I don't know how much that's helping, but I'm sure they've made a lot of fans along the way and have kind of set a tone for how to market online, especially on social media.
Didn't Burger King win like an award for like one of their print ads with like their, one of their Burger Kings caught fire.
Oh my God.
And it was like a photograph of that building catching fire. And there was like a clever tagline that went along with like their building catching on fire relating to their burgers or something like that.
I believe it, because you get the one cent Whopper going to
their
McDonald's
whole
location.
Identity, fighting with McDonald's.
Absolutely,
but I mean,
it's the enemy.
I think McDonald's is still probably pretty dominant as far as like sales and like that kind of thing goes. But they've definitely taken us like a really interesting, risky approach.
Yeah, it's everybody trying to take a swing at the champ.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's because, I mean, that's what happens when you're that established brand. But I think that's important to note, because building, there's that concept of like the 1,000 loyal fans is better than, you know, however many customers or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it's that idea that, yeah, sometimes building up a true, solid, loyal fan base takes time. Like, we see that with the clients we work with. It doesn't happen overnight, and the returns are not always immediate. But the importance of continuously pouring into a fan base that you are very intentional about, and catering to them, and respecting them, and understanding the story you're telling them, ultimately over time pays off.
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of, it's aligned with something I was thinking of earlier that has, like, I think people or society kind of catches up with you, you know? I think if you are true to yourself, true to your brand, true to your identity, it'll catch up. Like, I think of even like the word geekdom or like nerddom, and how negative a connotation it was like not that long ago, where if you were a fan of Star Wars or comic books or, you know, something like that, where it was very like separated from the rest of society, it's like, you know, everything catches up eventually. Like that whole kind of term and that whole fan base has kind of changed, where now you can't not see something related to Star Wars or the Marvel Universe because it's so huge.
Yeah, it becomes part of the lexicon of culture for sure.
Going back to like that whole nerdy thing being cool now, is like, it made me just think of like Childish Gambino. He's like this nerdy kid that like grew up a nerdy kid, right? And now he's like the most popular dude. Like,
Troy Barnes, Community. Exactly, and then you hear it in like his first raps, just like wearing that on his sleeve.
Yeah, same thing like him, like Chance, like, you know what I mean? People like that, like they become these like icons, and they were like, they grew up being that nerdy kid and that person that, so like she's saying that, like Kenina said, the society catches up to you, you know?
Yeah, I think it's something to be said if you're true to your identity and you're very authentic. I think people eventually kind of catch up and they realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think society, like you said, society has helped us a lot. But like one thing that, I don't know, for some reason I'm thinking about like how Stranger Things, like if you compare Stranger Things to like Star Wars back in the day, you know how like you had like those geeks, they were very separated. But now like people that watch Stranger Things, it's like everybody watches Stranger Things.
And yeah, Game of Thrones too.
Yeah, so it's Game of Thrones.
Stranger Things also touches on like the whole Goonies feel, right?
Yeah.
Like, the Goonies, like a bunch of nerdy kids like go on this epic adventure. Yep. Right. And
those were cult things when they came out. Right? And now they're mainstream things.
Yeah. Now everything is like if you watch the Goonies, you know, like everybody's watched the Goonies. Everybody's loved the Goonies, right? Same thing with Stranger Things. Like it's this whole thing of like these nerdy kids, they go on this epic adventure and like this whole story that follows these group of nerdy young kids. Mm-hmm. Right. And then,
I think that's just what's so exciting about being a fan. I mean, trying to have a conversation about what being a fan looks like is so difficult, because where do you start and where do you end? Like, it's impossible. And it's really awesome to have these kind of overview, bird's eye view conversations about what it looks like, because it just opens up all these doors about the experiences we have and the memories we have, and those are the kind of things, funny enough, those are the things we're kind of trying to sift through as we work with a new client, as we get a new brand. And we don't sit around and talk about Batman like per se, but the emotions and the feelings and the motivations and what we hope our work and what our clients, you know, brand looks and feels like just kind of subconsciously taps into that. We're informed by those things. And that's why these discussions are so fun. And that's why this podcast is something I'm really excited about, because moving forward, let's have those in-depth conversations with people from, you know, TV, from the food world, from fashion, from comic books, who are in it, who live that fan experience every day, who work with businesses and brands and companies that are in those spaces. And let's learn like what things have like developed, what it means to be a fan there. And that's always an exciting conversation. What do you all think fandom looks like moving forward into the future? Like, is there some revolution like on the horizon of the way that brands connect with people, the way that we connect with brands, kind of on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, I would say experience is everything. I would say the more ways and the more mediums that you can connect with your fans, the better. I think true fans will want to connect with you in as many places as possible. So whether it's online or, you know, and like a real experience that you can go in, like the Stranger Things pop-up that just happened in Santa Monica, like, those are real experiences that fans will take that step to connect with and become more ingrained with your brand.
Yeah, I think in the future there's gonna be, of course there's gonna be a saturation of a lot of things. Like, they're gonna be populating your phone, but like, that's the cool thing about the internet or about like media. That's like, you get all this information and then you can kind of like, well, this is not for me. This is not for me. But like this is my thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just like,
that's good.
Brands are gonna be able to like voice their brands in different medium platforms or like different mediums. And that's a cool thing because we don't know what's gonna happen with technology in the future. Like, we don't know how communication is gonna be in the next few years because we consume content through a rectangle. But you never know what's gonna happen next. Like we go do like a Black Mirror kind of thing. But it's like your stuff just starts popping out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, but that's just because you're a fan or you like things. So it's like, I think it's gonna be kind of cool to see what brands do with the future technologies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think touching on that, kind of closing it out, is like the fact that everything is so accessible and everyone has like a choice to just sift through tons of information and pick and choose what they want to follow and what they want to pay attention to. Just being true to what your brand stands for and what your brand is about will keep fans coming back and connecting to what you're about. You know what I mean? Just staying true to that, you'll always have a following of fans that want to come back to what you are.
Yeah. You know, the space is going to be saturated no matter what. So if your brand, if you're trying to grow your presence, if you're trying to grow your business, tell a story, stand for something, believe in something, because one way or another, people need to find you, and that's going to be the best way for them to do it.